Welcome to VoiceOver, Movies That Move Us. I'm your host, Heather Bigley, and I talk to people about the movies that made a mark, that led to cinematic epiphanies, and it's not always the movie you'd expect. Today's movie is Contact, directed by Robert Zemeckis and released in 1997. Adapted from Carl Sagan's 1970s novel, the movie stars Jodie Foster as astronomer Dr. Ellie Arroway, whose scientific team discovers an alien signal from outer space. Ellie must fight this whole movie. She fights for credit for her work, her voice to be heard at the White House, a spot on the spaceship built to alien specs, and finally, to be believed as she testifies in front of Congress about what happened to her on that spaceship. The film caused a sensation among my religious friends when it was released because of its ending, and that's one of the things I discuss with my guest today, Becca Hurley Long. She's a linguist, writer, and comedian. And hey folks, we realize that in this interview, Becca refers to a character named Joss, and I refer to a character named Palmer. They're in fact the same guy. It's Matthew McConaughey, the love interest for Jodie Foster. If you are super uncomfortable with spoilers, we're gonna spoil, okay? We're talking about the whole thing, including the movie's biggest reveal. Stick around after the convo for movie recommendations.
I love this genre, and I love, I don't know, I feel like the genre itself also encompasses a bunch of other things that just get copy-paste, put some weird techno babble over it. We're going to call this sci-fi, and
right.
And it's so many other things.
Because I love sci-fi, and the best sci-fi, I think, it takes our world, and it takes one thing, and it goes click, and it toggles it on or off or sideways, and it says, now what happens? Mm. Here's a thing that we thought was undebatable. Banal. Didn't matter at all. Let's see what happens if we change it. Is it how we think about our relationships with other humans? Is it how we, I don't know what it is. It doesn't even have to be related to technology.
I think that's a really cool definition of it, yeah. Especially because so many of the times that we want to tell a story that's really about humanity and how humanity would respond or what would happen to society, we need a reason to justify why that thing is different. And so sci-fi becomes a really easy vehicle. Well, it's because we invented a brain chip, and that brain chip does this, and now society is different. Sci-fi is great because it gives you a really easy answer, and you don't have to explain how that works.
Yeah. It's this interesting playground for us.
Totally.
I can go in this space and I can try all those things on. This is what makes Star Trek so interesting, is it just says...
I'm so glad you brought this up so I didn't have to. Yes, I really think Star Trek Next Generation is a mystery show.
Nice.
But we're not here to talk about that. Please continue.
It says, what if, and for only 22 minutes, what if for 22 minutes we said the world worked in this way?
Yeah.
What are all of the ramifications? And sci-fi... again, in its best sense, is philosophical.
Totally. And not all those hypotheticals are dependent on a weird, random technology. It's so funny. I recently tried, because I love Star Trek, I'm not a unilateral Star Trek fan. I just have watched Next Generation many times, and I finally thought, this is my chance to branch out. I need to become familiar with the rest of the franchise. I'm going to start from the beginning with Star Trek, the original series. And I did. And it was so hard to get through. And I was like, this is hot, sexist garbage. What am I watching? This is disgusting. Like, oh.
It feeds on horror and fear.
And I suspect preys on women because women are more easily and more deeply terrified, generating more sheer horror than the male of the species.
Terrible. Straight white man's fever dream. I can't do this. It's, ugh. And yeah, I do think a lot of it does not hold up today, but it's really interesting to go back and read how progressive it was for the time. And Gene Roddenberry had to fight to get all of the representation in that original series that he even did.
Yeah.
And, you know, nothing to do with the spaceships or the aliens or the costumes or the Federation or the lore, nothing to do with any of that. It was absolutely a hypothetical of what if in the future we got along and respected each other and saw each other as equals and collaborated in a way that just does not exist in modern society.
Right.
As it existed back then. And really cool to see. Like, watching it now in this century, it's not impressive because it actually looks super backward. What was progressive then is primitive now. But 100% sci-fi was a vehicle for a hypothetical society that we're fortunate to be so much closer to today.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Keep striving.
Two steps forward, one step back.
I think for me, the big surprise for me was that in this movie that was from Carl Sagan, who has become my favorite atheist. My husband and I, we're big Carl Sagan fans, and my husband is an amateur astronomer. So that in this movie, based on a book by Carl Sagan, that the person who represents faith in the film and the person who represents science in the film ultimately have to use the same language to describe their experience. And that actually shocked me.
Yeah, that was maybe the biggest twist. It was such a surprise to be watching a movie that was, it was a race to find the aliens until it wasn't. And then at the end of all that, to feel like it took a compassionate view of people of faith was really a twist. And I didn't realize that I was going to be surprised by that until I had a chance to think about it so much later. You just don't see that very often.
No.
When you get to the point where Ellie and Joss, they have that mutual understanding of sometimes you believe in something and you know it's true and you cannot transmit that information to other people, but that doesn't make it less true. The way this movie resolves is so beautiful. It's like a feeling that you have a lot of times if you're a person of faith and find yourself in places where you're trying to explain yourself or who you are. Or
your motivations in a lot of
your
ways.
Your motivations, yeah. Oh, I just thought that was such a beautiful part of the movie.
Yeah. So I think what's interesting are we have two parallel scenes in that film. There are probably more, but the ones that are most obvious to me are when Palmer says to Ellie, this is my experience and this is why I believe in God. They are in bed together. It's very intimate. They've just like consummated their relationship. He's sharing something really, really personal with her.
So I was lying there, just looking at the sky. And then I felt something. I don't know. All I know is that I wasn't alone. And for the first time in my life, I wasn't scared of nothing. You know, not even dying. It was God.
And there's no chance that you had this experience because some part of you needed to have it?
I mean, I'm a reasonably intelligent guy, but this... No, this, my intellect, it couldn't even touch this. No.
And then you can see her, like, draw away immediately. Oh, I didn't know you well enough to know that you believe in God, and
right.
That makes me really uncomfortable. And then at the end, we have the scene where she basically is going to use his same language to describe her experience. But now she's in front of Congress, like it's being televised and sent out to the world. So she's in the most public of spaces.
You admit that you have absolutely no physical evidence to back up your story.
Yes.
You admit that you very well may have hallucinated this whole thing. You admit that if you were in our position, you would respond with exactly the same degree of incredulity and skepticism.
Yes.
Then why don't you simply withdraw your testimony and concede that this journey to the center of the galaxy, in fact, never took place?
Because I can't. I had an experience. I can't prove it. I can't even explain it. But everything that I know as a human being, everything that I am, tells me that it was real. I was given something wonderful, something that changed me forever. A vision of the universe that tells us undeniably how tiny and insignificant and how rare and precious we all are. A vision that tells us that we belong to something that is greater than ourselves, that we are not, that none of us are alone.
In the theater when I first saw this, I felt such recognition. That's how I feel on the best days about God, right?
Yeah.
That I'm not alone, that I'm seen,
that I matter, that I'm known, all of these things, and that it extends not, it's not just me, it extends out.
Yeah.
And since I've seen the movie, I have realized how few times I put myself in the position to feel that when I could put myself in that position more and more. And I, as I watched it again, I thought, oh yeah, that's what we're all searching for.
Totally. It's so interesting to me because for a movie that talks and portrays very differently, like a lot of religion, a lot of science, and absolutely the tension between the two in some circles.
Come on. It's like you're saying that science killed God. What if science simply revealed that he never existed in the first place?
The most recent time that I watched this, I just took advantage of the fact that it's free on YouTube right now. And there are thousands of comments on the YouTube video of the entire movie, and no one is fighting. And I really feel like that's missing on today's internet. Like, I really expected that someone, at least from either side, to be chiming in of, this movie really validates my personal beliefs. And I just can't find it. And I think that is such a weird, unique little absence. And I think it's because of this message, because it underscores something that is so human, which is just this hope and this hunger for the knowledge that you're not alone.
There's a whole terrorist twist.
Bomb. He's got a bomb.
He's got a bomb.
I want that emergency response team up on the gantry now.
Yeah.
Which I had forgot when I watched it this time. Oh. I was like, they showed him the first time and I was like, oh, that guy.
That guy.
There's going to be bad news coming. Ellie is driving back to work in New Mexico, and the whole area has been taken over by people just obsessed with this idea that aliens have reached out.
Who polluted our air, who poisoned our water. Now these scientists have had their chance. Are these the kind of people that you want talking to your God for you?
It in fact reminds me of An Ace in the Hole, which is a Billy Wilder film. He does this so well. Which is about a man who gets stuck in a cave and then the media shows up and it becomes a literal circus because people are like, want to talk to the man in the hole. And anyway.
Everybody wants to see how you look. And I'm going to write a story. They want to know all about you. They'll be pulling for you.
So they're doing something like that. But there's all these different little niche groups who have shown up, right? There's the people who are religious. There are people who are space fanatics, I guess we can call them. There's all these different people. And I thought to myself, I feel like I'm seeing the literal embodiment of the internet.
Yes. Wow. What a great description of it. That's so true. That's so true. Because you've got people who are obviously taking it, the whole thing is a joke. You've got the Elvis with the people, Viva Las Vegas. You've got people who are just there to talk about cars. They're having a car show at the Very Large Array. Yes. Just because everyone else is gathered. Like, there's people who are just here to watch, here to have a good time. There are people who are angry and shouting. There are people who are practicing their religion right there. Like, it's...
Yeah.
And it's this huge mishmash, and it's all happening together, and it is loud. That's the internet.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yes. And in fact, watching this movie in 2025, I thought, oh, there are so many weird things that I feel like are happening right now. There's a tech billionaire shadowy figure who's funding things for Ellie when she gets stuck. And there's this backlash saying we don't need science and science doesn't benefit us and we should not spend our dollars. So it just felt like, oh, I'm watching some distorted mirror of my present day.
We just had that Blue Origin spaceflight.
Yeah.
And the backlash from that, the resources it consumed, the amount of time they were in space. So many people who are saying, how does this advance the cause of women? Other than it seeming like a giant promotional stunt.
Yeah.
From someone who had a ton of money to do it. When I tell people about this movie, like, this is the image that flashes through my mind when I think about this movie. Because for a movie that's all about aliens, there's hardly any aliens in it. And it's mostly about people and how do people respond to this huge information. And I think it's a really fascinating And yeah, it seems realistic. It doesn't even seem that hypothetical. This is exactly how people would respond. Some people would panic.
Right.
Some people would praise it. You'd have these huge cultural and religious bubbles, and everyone would be questioning everything they believe.
Would you be questioning everything you believe? I'm trying to think about that. If I heard that there was an alien, I don't know that I would. I kind of might be like, huh, cool.
It really depends what you believe.
We knew they were out there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I would be so excited. It wouldn't challenge what I believe at this point. Although, let me tell you, so the first time I watched this movie, probably not that significant. I just thought it was a great movie and I loved the mystery of it. And I was just like, what an amazing sci-fi film. That's different.
Yeah.
But the next time I tried to watch it, my life had changed a lot. And I was in a broken marriage. I was really struggling personally. And I was looking for any shred of comfort. And I checked this movie out from the library. And I was going to try and show it to my now ex-husband. And the movie starts with total silence. The title comes up in silence. And then it just blasts you with noise.
Clearly, I've never been there, but it feels like me.
You get this sequence, which is just unbelievable. I could talk so much about this first sequence. I think it's incredible. Going back through time, you're hearing transmissions, and it is this really stunning and slow and meditative way to begin a movie. And long story short, we couldn't get through it because he was criticizing the movie and talking over it and making these little jokes, and I couldn't do it. And so I turned it off, and of course he didn't care because he didn't want to watch the movie in the first place. And it was fine, but it was one of those weird moments where I actually felt like I kept something sacred to myself in this relationship where everything that made me up was constantly being torn apart. And I watched it later by myself when I had a moment of privacy, and that theme of loneliness and if anyone's actually alone, that took on such a different dimension for me when I watched it that time. And in a lot of different weird ways, there was a lot going on in that relationship and a lot of really harmful and abusive things. And in a lot of ways, my sense of reality was being challenged all the time because I was constantly being lied to. And I also didn't think that other people would believe me if I told them what was really going on. And I felt like I was living a double life. And so there was something so precious about this idea of sometimes you have knowledge and nobody will believe you, but that doesn't make it less true and that doesn't make you any less worthy of being believed.
Yeah.
And it just, that whole thing about loneliness, and including you might go to extreme lengths to find the answer that you're looking for, that you're not alone. And I think it's so ironic that having crossed the universe, having made contact, Dr. Ellie Arroway is more alone than she's ever been when she comes back.
Right.
Because she cannot share that experience really with anyone except those who are willing to just believe her.
Yeah. And we have that. I actually hadn't remarked upon it the first time, but this time when I was watching it, and she comes out of testifying in front of Congress, and Palmer's there with her, and he says to the press,
"As a person of faith, I'm bound by a different covenant than Dr. Arroway. But our goal is one and the same, the pursuit of truth. I, for one, believe her."
And I was like, that's really the culmination of their relationship. It's not the sexual intimacy. It's not, it could be so many things, but the real thing that matters is that he says, she's telling the truth and I believe her.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of women, that's really powerful.
100%.
And that it's Matthew McConaughey saying it at the
same time.
Doesn't
hurt. Doesn't hurt at all. Yeah, absolutely. Your protagonist is a scientist and she's very open about what she believes, but what she's really having feels like a faith journey.
Yeah.
And it's a compassionate look at that journey. And so I think it's it was really cool to feel represented in that movie by her. I just think that's one of the cool things about this movie, is that it creates empathy by allowing you to step into the shoes of any of the characters.
Yeah.
And feel for the person at the center either way.
There was a moment where I really disagreed with Palmer Joss, like, where, so these two have this kind of brief affair, mm-hmm. and then time goes by. She's going to see him again, but she's going to see him on a talk show. Mm-hmm. And now he's like the advisor to the president. He's the spiritual advisor to the president, who is played by Bill Clinton in these funny little things, because the director is Robert Zemeckis, who had just done all that kind
Forrest
of stuff.
Gump.
In Forrest Gump.
Yes.
So, of course, he's like, I'm going to use Bill Clinton here. So there are so many weirdnesses about that. That said, he's on this show and he has this question.
Are we happier? As a human race, is the world fundamentally a better place because of science and technology?
To which I would say, yes.
I would agree with that one.
I was like, wait, you can't seriously say that in 1997, that science has not made the world a better place. Oh, infant death decreased. The death of people under 5 plummeted. Why did that happen? Sewers? Vaccines? But the rest of his piece, I agree with. He says, we feel emptier and lonelier and more cut off from each other than at any other time in human history. And that, I say, yeah, agreed. I don't know if it's science specifically or all of science. I would say definitely technologies that we make use of.
Something that was really interesting to me, the 5th, 6th, 7th time I watched it. But like there are so many points in this movie where the plot cannot move forward except for a tiny grain of information that only one person has that no one else has access to. And I'm talking specifically about like
how to decode the instructions, right?
Yes. Yeah. Haddon has that information. Haddon figures that out. There are like 3 different times when her colleague, Kent, who is blind, he hears something in the static that the computers can't pick up, that nobody else can tell. He finds the second layer of the signals. He realizes that it's that there's interlaced frames. He does all that. When she is in the pod and she's ready to go and they're not sure whether to continue, he hears her voice and he's like, I hear her.
I hear her. Barely, but she's there.
Okay, go.
She says she's okay to go.
Right.
And though, like, I think that is a beautiful representation too. It's so funny. This reminds me, I'm trying to remember the name of the book. It was talking about technology and what it does for society. The author who's talking about it refers to technology most of all as robots. What are we okay with robots doing? And it was so interesting because one of the problems, it turns out, is not that technology itself is doing anything bad. It's just that humans keep trying to find technology to replace themselves in the activities that make us most human.
Yeah.
So there's all of this research and money going into robots for childcare and robots for elder care and that sort of a thing. And the great problem with that is that should robots be doing that?
Should humans give up the privilege and honor of doing that?
There are certain things that machines can do better than people, 100%. But at some point, and the point seems like it's now, like we will get to choose what we continue to do, because if we don't, then we lose our humanity.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of them. I think that sort of personal care in our families, I think that's a really dangerous place where we shouldn't be trying to replace ourselves. Or we can, but at a huge cost.
Ellie does end up in space through a wormhole. She meets her father, or she meets someone who looks like her father.
Yeah.
And of course, there's a whole explanation that they have somehow like tapped into her brain and downloaded all of her memories. And therefore, they picked a figure that would be loving and she would trust. But at the same time, there's so much emotional payoff in that scene that has nothing to do with what he's saying to her. But just the fact that she gets to see her father again.
Yeah.
And experience him as an adult.
Totally.
And I just thought, we're watching a scene of healing for this woman.
Hi, Sparks.
Dad? I missed you.
Loved you.
Oh, I'm sorry I couldn't be there for you, sweetheart.
When I first saw that it was her dad, I was worried. I thought it was going to be a sinister thing.
Yeah.
Because at first it was like, oh, is this a manipulation? But like looking at it closer, at no point, I mean, it feels so unreal. The colors feel unreal. The sky is a giant inferno of the heavens. It's not real. He's wearing on his hand the ring that she's wearing on her hand that she got from him. And I think if they wanted it to be anything other than that, like, beautiful, emotional moment, I think there are so many ways that could have played differently. But also, I think, like, when we first meet that character, she's looking for her mom, who has died. And we see this question evolve for her. Because, the first thing is, can we talk to mom?
Yeah.
Is she out there? And her dad's, no, I don't think so. And she becomes more disillusioned with this question, but it doesn't leave her because she just thinks, she just becomes more driven to prove that there's someone out there, that there's anything out there, that this impossible void means something because, I don't know, it's just encroaching in on her. She's just feeling all this emptiness and this loss and this absence of people that she loves. And for her to find her dad at the end of that journey, even though she knows it's not him, but it is also vindication that this thing that she's hoped for the whole time was worth hoping for, that there is something out there.
Yeah.
And then they give her nothing. There's no other answers. There's no other satisfaction for any of the other millions of things she wants to ask. But it's enough to know that.
And she doesn't even get to stay that long.
She doesn't even get to stay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just melts away and she's back. But I agree. I think it's such a healing moment. And it's healing both because the question that her original question evolved into, which is anyone out there, or am I alone? Are we alone? And the answer is no one's alone.
No one is.
You feel so lost, so cut off, so alone. Only you're not. See, in all our searching, the only thing we found that makes the emptiness bearable is each other.
As a person from our particular faith tradition, seeing her father walk towards her, to me, again, it really resonated. Not necessarily that it was her father, but it was her family. Here's her family come to talk to her in a way and tell her the thing, maybe to ease the fact that you don't get to stay. We don't have all the answers either. This is part of a grander thing that for some people might be exciting, but for other people might feel like really intimidating and frightening. Oh, they're just going out, contacting, who are these people?
Yeah.
But just that, I don't know, for me, again, it resonated as a spiritual experience. And it was interesting to me when she gets back and she's talking about it in all these scientific terms, I thought of this thing that I've been hearing lately that actually really helps me, which is science is about the how, but it can't necessarily supply the why. And I like that.
I love that. When she's having that conversation with the being that is not her dad, but is
looks like her dad.
Looks like her dad. And he says that thing.
This is the way it's been done for billions of years. Small moves, honey. Small moves.
Talking as someone from our faith tradition, I was like, oh my gosh, because it for the first time I realized, doesn't this sound just like prophets? Man, you've got one person who had a vision, and for that parallel, for that to be structured that way, was just like, oh man, how cool, how desperately lonely to be in that position. I think one of the other things that feels so healing about that scene on Vega? No, not on Vega. In that simulated Pensacola. Yeah, that scene, the gentleness of the whole thing and the love in it. Even when it's coming from an outside perspective, because they're talking about humanity as outsiders, they're saying you're capable of such terrible such beautiful dreams and such terrible nightmares. But it's so tender and it's so loving. And
what a relief, especially after all of the tension of the movie where people are saying, this is going to open a door. And what if this is how Earth is destroyed? What if there's been this huge looming threat the whole time where we just don't know what will happen, but it's probably bad, but we can't help ourselves. We're going anyway. And the fact that it is loving and gentle is beautiful because I think Ellie's issue with a lot of the Ellie has had these really harsh experiences in life, and no experience of religion or faith or anything has seemed gentle to her. You've got that insensitive pastor at the funeral saying, you got to understand, Ellie.
There's a bigger what does he say? It's some version
Listen,
of
you just
like...
got to accept it. This is God's will. And
Ellie, I know it's hard to understand this now, but we aren't always meant to know the reasons why things happen the way they do. Sometimes we just have to accept it as God's will.
What a terrible thing to say to a child at a funeral. Like, you've got that, you've got the terrorism, right? Like, no experience of faith or God has been kinder, except for Joss, right? Who has been really kind and supportive and stuff. And so I think to find her dad also, who, at least as far as the story that we know is concerned, is this symbol of love to her, somebody who truly loved and supported her, is, I think, just really beautiful too. It's
even the opening scenes with her father when he's teaching her and he'll ask her a question and she'll say, oh, I don't know. And he'll say, do you want a hint? And then he'll give her some little hint.
Could we talk to Jupiter? Or what's the one after that? Don't tell me.
I'll give you a hint. Hula hoops.
Saturn. Can we talk to Saturn?
And I just was like, oh, we have this beautiful representation of what fatherhood is in its best moments.
100%.
Of mentorship and guidance and love and providing opportunity. And yeah, it just made me feel a little crater in my chest.
Oh.
Isn't that beautiful?
And isn't it cool? Like, they, as we understand the people that they're contacting, the aliens, they're trying to use a loving framework to communicate who they are.
Yeah.
Like, you are too little and small and uncivilized and not technologically advanced enough to understand or really actually communicate with us. She's in a bubble, even in that little Pensacola simulation. So she's really being sheltered, but they're saying, we're going to pick the most loving, gentle representation from your own memory to communicate who we are and what our intentions are. And I think that's really interesting, too. I would say that as my definition of God matures in my own life, it's 100% shaped by the people I know and the kindnesses that I've received and the love that I've observed in the world. Like, I have no way of understanding God except for what I have experienced in the way of love. And that relationship still might be defined by a maddening slow drip of information.
Thanks to Becca for speaking to me about Contact. I was glad to revisit the ideas and emotions of this film, and 30 years later, it's always interesting to see those cultural artifacts. How did we feel about science? How did we feel about women? How did we feel about careers and love and all the rest? And gosh, weren't clothes really baggy in the 1990s? So how about some recommendations? We mentioned, or I mentioned, or someone mentioned, that Contact was directed by Robert Zemeckis, who by 1997 had also directed Romancing the Stone, Back to the Future, and Who Framed Roger Rabbit. He's known for his work with special effects and his close ties to Steven Spielberg. His film Castaway, which premiered in 2000, is a great film with an excellent screenplay that explores how survival demands transformation, and true maturity may not look like what we expected. It's a really interesting companion piece to Contact, because while Ellie Arroway heads to the stars, the main character of Castaway is isolated on a remote island. If what draws you to Contact is the female lead who must convey an impossible truth, the OA might just be your ticket. Created by and starring Britt Marling, it's a TV series that asks a whole lot of questions and provides the weirdest answers. It actually brought me to tears and made me a Britt Marling fan for life. And it's not sci-fi, but check out the movie I mentioned earlier, Billy Wilder's An Ace in the Hole. It's cynical and sad, with Kirk Douglas and his dimpled chin blowing into small-town New Mexico to take advantage of a local tragedy to sell some newspapers and his name. Billy Wilder's influence can be seen everywhere today, from Spike Lee to Cameron Crowe to David Lynch. And though this film isn't his best known, it's certainly a fine example of what a strong screenplay in the hands of a sharp director can accomplish. Voiceover is edited by Aaliyah Alexander and is a production of BYU Radio. I'm your host, Heather Bigley.